I oftentimes try to avoid something in myself and also feeding something in other people when I'm sharing that just wants to understand things. There's something in me that wants to read the book of Romans and feels content, or at least used to. This used to be very common in me, feels content or even feels excited when I understand something. Probably not all of you are like that. I'm like that. I like to feel like I understand. I don't like to read something I don't understand, especially if I feel like it's something important. I want to understand it. And then so when I feel like I can finally understand something, or I've put the pieces together and come to a some kind of an understanding, then I have a tendency, I think a lot of people have a tendency of thinking that we've thereby gained what the words are for. And I know now that that's not the case. The words are not to be understood, just to be understood. It is important to understand them, but the reason for all of the words is that we live differently. The Bible, I've talked about, I think I talked about this in one of my groups this week, and it's been on my mind a lot recently, just how the Bible, or all of God's communication with man, isn't aimed at the understanding. It isn't aimed at the comprehension. It's not aimed at beliefs, as though what it's trying to do is create true beliefs. And I fear that like a huge part of Christianity, I know this at least for my experience in the past, and a lot of people that I was involved with for many years in the past relate to Christianity as though it were a way to understand true things. And that's really what it's aiming at. I gotta read this. I gotta understand it. I gotta go to this. I gotta read this book because I don't understand this. I've got to hear this sermon because this doesn't make sense to me. And now I need to, oh, I might have a wrong belief about this. And now I'm convinced that I had a wrong belief before, but now I have a right belief, just really feel like the Bible was not written for that purpose. Revelation, I mean, God's communication with man is not unto that end at all. It is primarily given to us to teach us how to walk with God, how to live before God, how to live our lives in His presence. As I was mentioning this week in another meeting, it's to teach us to walk in the light and under the cross, if you want to just put it in simple terms. And there's a lot of understanding that goes into that, and a lot of pictures in the Old Testament, a lot of stories, and a lot of symbols, and a lot of theology and doctrine that kind of form all the different road signs and billboards and whatever it is that like kind of help us understand that journey, and see pictures of other people that have walked that journey and experienced that process of walking with God. But it's just so easy and so common to become really familiar with those road signs, you make a collection of them in your filing cabinet, and not actually walk with God. And everything that is actually going to do anything to you, and it's going to make any difference in you, is not whether or not you understand, like Romans 4, which is the chapter that I'm kind of thinking about right now, but whether you live Romans 4 in the same way that Abraham lived it. I mean, because it's a description, largely Romans 4 is a description of Abraham's faith and how that faith became in him righteousness. And that's kind of the subject that I have on my mind. But we can just describe these things and understand these things, and And this is exactly what the Jews were doing when Jesus told them in John chapter 8, when they boasted about being the sons of Abraham. And he said, if you were the sons of Abraham, you would do the works of Abraham. In other words, if you were the sons of Abraham, you would live the life of Abraham. You would do what he did. You would live as he lived. You'd walk as he walked. But he says, but you guys are actually trying to kill me. You're trying to persecute the life and snuff out the life. And that's something that Abraham didn't do. And yet they're boasting and having the inheritance or the lineage of Abraham and the beliefs of Abraham and being the promoters of Abraham's religion. And yet Jesus looks at him and says, you're the opposite of Abraham. You're sons of the devil. And the reason you're sons of the devil isn't because you don't believe in Abraham and because you don't have the same beliefs as Abraham. The devil has the same beliefs as Abraham. The reason you don't actually, you can't call yourself sons of Abraham is because you don't live the life that Abraham lived. And the life that Abraham lived was the life of faith. And so I guess, I mean, part of me, I was thinking this morning, man, I'd love to just like talk, look through the whole book of Romans and take a number of weeks and months, I don't know, and just like go through it. But my fear in doing that, maybe I will, I don't know, one day or because it's all just become so meaningful and rich to me. But all of it as a testimony of how to live, how to walk with God. Everything is about how to walk with God. You know that one Micah 6:8. It's Micah, right? Yeah. You know, like what does God require of you? To love, basically to love what he loves and to walk with him in humility, to love righteousness and mercy and to walk with your God in humility. That's what God requires of you. Now, there's a lot that goes into explaining in the Bible why that's so important, what happens when you do that, what Jesus did to be able to give you an ability to do that, how it would have been impossible if Christ wouldn't have come, died, rose, and given you his spirit. What happens with those who don't live like that? What happens with those who begin to live like that and then don't continue? They never bear fruits. Their plant withers and dries up. You know, there's so many things that have to do with the describing of everything having to do with that, really. But nothing replaces the actual doing it, the actual living that way. And so I guess my fear of like going through a book of Romans, and I'm not totally opposed to it. I don't want to have anyone slide into the idea or the desire of wanting to just understand a tricky book. That's not why Paul wrote Romans. That's not why God preserved the book of Romans and left it for us. It's so that we live like Abraham and like Paul and like Christ. It's so that we come to, and this is again what this little section here is about. We come to experience righteousness by walking with God in a specific way. Okay, so this chapter is the one that has some verses about about righteousness being imputed to man. Or some verses say counted righteousness, imputed righteousness. That's the exact same word in Greek. It uses both of them in the New King James in this chapter, but they're both the same word. There's other verses, other translations of that same word too. And I think that maybe reflects the fact that there's a bunch of different translations of that word maybe reflects the fact that we're not really sure. Christians have been unsure kind of what to do with that word. But I'll tell you what it doesn't mean. It doesn't mean that God called Abraham something contrary to what he really was. That's what it does not mean. It doesn't mean that God looked at him and called him a nature that was different or the opposite of the nature that he was walking in and living in. Because that just doesn't make any spiritual sense. What is righteousness? Righteousness is not a word, a name that you can give something that is unrighteous. I know that sounds, it should sound really obvious and plain, but there are huge quantities of Christians who believe that they're righteous, even though they're totally unrighteous. And they're not even living with God or trying to live with God in the way that Abraham was. Now, that the Pharisees should be a really clear picture of this to us, who were doing all kinds of things to try to make themselves righteous according to an outward law. And yet they were living in a nature that was unrighteous, and they were calling themselves righteous. Well, we look at the Pharisees now, 2,000 years later, and we say those guys were dopes. You know, what was wrong with them? Why didn't, how can they be so blind? And yet we go around talking about just having to have, like, we understand faith to be just a belief in the historical coming and work of Christ. And we think that that in and of itself, without walking by faith, living by faith, living like Abraham did, experiencing the work of faith in the heart, staying where faith experiences the access to grace and causes grace to become an increasing and overwhelmingly real power in the soul of man that makes changes, that produces a new nature. We do the exact same thing. We think that we're somehow righteous by having adopted a Christian faith. A faith that is, and a lot of circles, that word is synonymous with just their Christian religion or a Christian confession. And that's not what Paul's talking about here. And that's why this is important to me. It's important to me because I want to have righteousness. And I believe that I really do. I really want to have righteousness. I don't want God, I don't want to pretend like God calls me something that I'm not. I want to actually have him call me what I am. And I want, when he calls me what I am, I want him to call me righteous. And I think there's only one way, one real way that God's ever going to call me righteous. And that's when I'm walking in the life that is righteousness. What is righteousness? Righteousness is rightness. You see, righteousness is that which is right and good and clean and pure and perfectly aligned with God. You could say it's the nature of God, because in everything that it comes out from God, making everything look like God. Anyone that walks in righteousness shares the nature of God, and in some measure reflects the attributes or the virtues of God. Again, righteousness is just rightness, and you can't look at something that's wrong and call it right. God can't do that, for the simple reason, because, you know, how can you say God can't do that? Because it's a lie. God can't do lies. He doesn't do lies. He doesn't do contradictions of his own truth. You know, that's where omnipotence reaches its limits. When you ask God to do something that contradicts himself, his nature. In fact, there's a verse that says it is impossible for God to lie. It's impossible. What do you mean it's impossible for God to do something? I thought God could do everything. Well, he can't. It doesn't make sense. I mean, maybe you shouldn't even say he can't. It doesn't even make sense for him to be righteousness and also be unrighteousness, to contradict his own nature. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense for him to be the truth and lie. It doesn't make sense for him to look at someone living in self-will, departing with every step and every desire from his righteous will and call that person righteous. That doesn't make sense. And we just have to like kind of dismiss that idea from our. And I don't think you guys probably have that idea, but I don't know. I talk to a lot of people and a lot of pastors, and a lot of pastors have that idea. They'll say it's just like even they'll begin their sentences while they're talking. They'll say, "Well, I know I'm righteous because of what Christ did, but the foundation is, well, I know that God already sees me as righteous, even though I'm living in this addiction and doing this and cheated on my wife and this whatever, you know." And I always want to say, let's go back to that first thing you said. What is righteousness? Righteousness is rightness. It's goodness. It's purity. It's when the things that are made by God live in the will and nature of God. That's righteousness. What's unrighteousness? It's when the things that are made by God live in a contrary will and nature and follow it and live in it intentionally. They follow the leader of their will away from it. They depart. They depart from the nature and will of God. And then that's, you know, there's different names for that. You call it wickedness, you call it sin, you could call it unrighteousness. Maybe all those have slightly different connotations, but they're more or less the same thing. And so God gave a law, and the law brought condemnation because the written law described righteousness. And it did it in a weird way. It did it, I mean, it did it in some very clear moral commands, like you shall not, you know, lie. Or thou shalt not murder. But it did it also and more so in a whole bunch, 600 and something different individual commands that have to do with pictures of cleanness and goodness and rightness and a whole lot of pictures of cleanness because. Those pictures of cleanness are actually probably more helpful if you read them with open eyes, more helpful to understand what righteousness is than a mere command. Because if you just say, thou shalt not lie, the nature of man is so clever that he'll divide the word lie into 16 different kinds, and then he'll say like these are the ones that God meant, and these are the ones that are okay, and in this situation that's whatever, and they'll just make rules about outward rules about a command. But if you look at like a picture of a person having to wash himself and put on white garments. And make sure you put on the white undergarments too, so that when you go up the stairs to the altar, there's no flesh seen, you know, and things like that. That speaks even more deeply, I think, than just a sentence does, because here is a person that can't get close to God without being totally bathed, washed, and wearing white garments on the inside and on the outside. You know, and anyway, I'm kind of rambling and going off into other details, but the law described righteousness in all these different ways, and yet there was a nature that was still working in man, and that nature can be simply described as self-will, because that's the only thing man had to do to become unrighteous was take one step out of God's will. That's all you have to do. Because any other will that's working contrary to God's will is unrighteous, period. Self-will is unrighteous. Why? Because it goes out from, departs from, is contrary to the one good, perfect, acceptable will. Perfect, acceptable and pleasing. Is that what it says in Romans 12, something like that? Those three words. Good, acceptable, and perfect. Yeah. Good, acceptable, and perfect will. Yeah. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind that you may prove what is the good and acceptable and perfect will of God. You step away from what is good, acceptable, and perfect, and what are you stepping into? You're stepping into something that is not good, not nor acceptable, far from perfect. And that's that's all, that's what unrighteousness is. It steps in a self will. And that's why, and one of the things that another thing that's been on my mind recently is just, and I've talked about this here, I'm sure, but just the incredible importance of that prayer, your will be done in my earth as it is done in heaven. Let your will be done, or Jesus praying to the Father, not my will, but yours. Why not your will? Because every step away from the good, acceptable, perfect will of God is something less than good, acceptable, and perfect. Anyway, God gave a written law, and in that law, he described righteousness. But the problem with that law was that, as the scriptures say, it was weak because of the flesh. What does that mean? Weak because of the flesh. It means it couldn't give what it was describing because there was already a nature working in man that was totally against it, totally contrary to it. So the written law of God was good. It had a bad relationship with man. With man, it operated as a ministry of condemnation. With man, it operated as a curse because it pointed out man and said, that's not right. That's not righteous. That's not clean. That's not white garments. And I can see your flesh over there. You know, that's just what the written law of God did. And since there was another nature or another law working in man that was contrary to it, then it became a ministry of condemnation. So Paul says in Romans 3, he says, but now the righteousness of God apart from the law is revealed, being witnessed by the law and the prophets. This is in 3:21. But now the righteousness of God apart from the law is revealed, being witnessed by the law and the prophets. What does that mean? That means that the law, the written law, and the prophets talked about a different kind of righteousness. And now, Paul says, that different kind of righteousness, which is apart from the law, it's not contrary to the law. He actually says, a little later, he says, do we then make void the law through faith? Certainly not. On the contrary, we establish the law, or we confirm the law, is the way it says it in Spanish. No, faith confirms the law. It establishes the law. It brings into existence the thing described by the law. But it's not a righteousness based on outward doing of things described that are contrary to an inward life. So you can wash your vessels and you can put on your white garments and you can shave your hairs after you have leprosy and you can wash your whatever houses and you can kill a bird or kill a turtle dove or an ox. And you and the fact of the matter is you can do all those outward things of an outward law and still walk away from them with the exact same inward nature. Why? Because that outward law was weak because of the flesh, because there was an inward nature in man that could not, as Paul says in Romans 8, obey the law. It could not, and this is a little later, but because the carnal mind, the mind of the flesh, is enmity against God. It is not subject to the law of God, nor indeed can it be. Why? How? Because it's gone out. That's what the carnal mind, that's what the flesh is. It is a nature that has gone out from the will of God. And now it lives in self-will. Now it lives doing its own things and produces all kinds of fruits that he describes in like what you want to know what self is? He says it here. Find it. It is men not desiring to retain God in their knowledge and going out into those things which are not fitting. They're not right. They're not appropriate. And therefore, they're filled with all unrighteousness. That's the first thing he says, unrighteousness. Here, they're filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness. They're whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, violent, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, unmerciful, who knowing that the righteous judgment of God, who knowing the righteous judgments of God, that those who practice such things are deserving of death, not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice them. That's a thorough, I think, description of man living in self-will. And so he says that now there's a righteousness of God apart from the law that is revealed, and it's witnessed by the law and the prophets. But the law and the prophets could only witness to it. All they could do is point to it. They could say, it's coming, it's better. It's not just you putting a white robe on your dirty heart. It's not that. It's not just you killing an animal and walking away and feeling angry and spiteful and evil and disobedient. Still, it's not that. It's a different kind of law, or a different kind of righteousness. It's apart from the law. And here it is. What is the, this is the next verse, verse 22. It is the righteousness of God. It's God's righteousness. It's a return to the nature of God. And it is through faith in Jesus Christ to all and on all who believe. Now, you could stop here and you could say, oh, that's great because I have faith and because I believe in what God has done through Christ. And I must have this righteousness of God because I have faith. But just be really careful. I mean, there is truth to that statement if you're actually walking in faith and living by faith. But faith is a way to live and a way to walk with God. And that is something that we just absolutely need to understand. Faith doesn't let you keep living your own life. Real faith doesn't let you stay in your own country, kindred, and father's house. And this is the example that we get from Abraham. Faith wasn't a belief that was imputed to him as righteousness. He didn't stay in his country, kindred, and father's house, get a new belief, and then God said, you got it. You've got the righteousness now because you believed what I told you, and you know it's true. That wasn't what faith was or did for Abraham. And that's what I'm kind of trying to say, is that it is by faith. And that is how God puts righteousness in you and causes you to find and feel and experience a new nature in you. 100%, I agree. It is 100% by faith. But faith is more than just you believing true words and being excited about understanding Romans and accepting what Christ did historically for you. All of that is good, and maybe I couldn't go as far as to say necessary, because I think there's people that walk by faith who don't have a full understanding of all that God has done for them outwardly. But faith, the man or the woman who is actually believing, is not living where faith found them, where faith was revealed to them, is not staying where they were and now having a new faith. Because that's just not what faith is, and that's not what faith does. Faith comes to you from God, and it puts in you a new seeing and a new hungering and a new understanding and a new desire, a new willing. It is a gift of God that, when it comes alive in man, puts a hook in his heart and begins to reel him in, so to speak, like a fishing pole. It comes out from God, it hooks the heart of man and changes his direction. And what it immediately does in everyone that finds real faith is it causes repentance, which is a change of direction. Repentance, you've heard me say this before, but it's not just saying you're sorry, because you can say you're sorry as you continue to live in the same things. A lot of people do that. I'm sorry, I did that. Oh, I shouldn't have done that, and then just do the same thing the next day. But faith, when it comes alive in a person, it changes their direction. The first thing faith says is what it says to Abraham. Now, and I want you to look at the life of Abraham. We won't have much, a whole lot of time to talk about all this today, apparently, but just think about the life of Abraham and what faith did in the life of Abraham. In fact, you can just read Romans 11, because the whole chapter of Romans 11 is what faith did in all of those people. In not one of those people in Roman, I'm sorry, Hebrews 11, did faith just sit there in their head like a belief. All of them are examples of people that in whom faith did things, changed things, pulled them out of things, caused them to walk towards things, overcome things, live things. Every one of those examples in Romans or Hebrews 11. I keep saying Romans. And that's exactly what we see in the life of Abraham. The first thing that faith said when it found Abraham was, you can't stay here. Everything you know, everything you have, everything you're hoping to inherit from your father's house, everywhere you've been, all that you are, I need to take you out of it. And if you don't walk with me by faith and come out of the things that faith will lead you out of, then by no means can you say that you are a man of faith. You are far from being adequate to be the father of faith, Abraham, of all who will believe, because you are refusing, if Abraham did this, which he did not, you are refusing to walk by faith. But that's not what Abraham did. Faith shone in his heart, or shined in his heart, and put a hook in his heart and caused him to see with new eyes and hunger with a new hunger and will with a new will. And he chose every day to walk in that faith. And that faith produced a work in Abraham. And that work in Abraham was called righteousness. And what it did practically was it brought him out of everything that was old and caused him to walk with God in such unbelievable humility and submission and resignation that he was willing to do even the most painful things that faith required of him in order to continue walking in the will of God. Now, that's a real faith. That's a growing faith. It says here in this chapter that he grew strong in faith, giving glory to God. He believed, he hoped against hope. He looked at his own dead body and said, "That's not going to stop God." He looked at the dead womb of his wife and said, "That's not going to stop God." He heard faith say, "Go cast out from you your own son, your own Ishmael." And he said, "I believe that your word is, your will is righteous." And he did it. He rose early the next morning and went out and did it. He heard faith call him to Mount Moriah to sacrifice his own son. He's what God was communicating, revealing, making known, making real in him by faith. He became, as it says here, the father of faith, because faith brought him on a journey. And everything we read about his life was not that he just came to a correct doctrinal stance and now he was on God's team. That's not what Abraham did. I know I'm repeating myself, but I just kind of not want to knock that idea kind of out of people's minds. That's not what being counted righteous or being imputed righteous is about. Being imputed righteous or receiving righteous. It's fine if you've used the word impute because it comes from somewhere else and it comes into you. And you can think of it like an injection if you want to, but you have to understand that that is a living thing that's growing in you as you walk with God in the way that Abraham walked with God. There's a lot of different verses in here that we could look at, but then it talks about how he was righteous, not when he was circumcised, but actually before God gave him the covenant of circumcision. And he received the sign of circumcision as a seal of the righteousness of faith which he had while still uncircumcised. What does that mean? He said that just means that circumcision was a sign of what faith had done in him. It wasn't the way he got righteousness. He said he had righteousness before he was circumcised. He had righteousness by faith before he was circumcised. Well, then what was circumcision? Circumcision was a perfect picture of what faith does. It cuts off the flesh. It removes the flesh. And that's going to be the picture, God says, of all of those who will walk by faith. They're going to have their flesh cut off too by faith. And that's the sign, the outward sign of a people who are walking with me. And there's a lot more in this chapter that we could look at specifically. But I guess that's kind of like the main thing on my heart this morning was just to say that faith is how man receives righteousness. But righteousness is rightness. Righteousness is goodness. Righteousness is the will of God working and living in man. And the way that man experiences righteousness is faith. And what faith does is brings the heart of man, it changes his direction and teaches man to walk with God in a profound humility and resignation, believing, looking, following, listening, casting off every Ishmael that the Lord exposes along the way, bringing you out of your country, kindred, and father's house in a journey, a living journey, a living walking into everything that God has promised. And the result of it is flesh cut off and a life and a nature that God looks at and says, that's mine. I did that. That's my will. That's my nature. That's my life. And if we're going to be people of faith, we can't just be people of beliefs. We can't just be people of doctrines. We can't just be people of understanding. We have to be people who are, as another verse it says here, walking in the footsteps of our father Abraham. Even the word footsteps implies a journey. It implies a walk with God. It implies communion. It implies staying with him in a journey that he's walking in. And we're going to find that two things. We're going to find that the same faith that worked in Abraham brings us on a journey that is exactly like his, inwardly, not necessarily outwardly, leaving an outward habitation, but inwardly. And we're also going to find that if we stay in faith and grow in faith and walk in faith and follow faith and love faith, then righteousness isn't just going to be a word that God uses to refer to us, even though we live in an unrighteous nature. It's going to be the nature that is progressively more and more working in us as the life and motivation and the reality of our hearts and desires and actions. So that Jesus won't say to us what he said to the Jews, "You say you're sons of Abraham." Christians too say they're sons of Abraham, but you're not doing the works of Abraham. You're not living the life of Abraham. You're not walking with God like Abraham did. You're not following faith. You're not living in faith. You're not casting off your Ishmael. You're not really circumcising your heart. You're not living like Abraham lived. So you cannot claim to be true sons of Abraham.